John Munson in for Joy Cardean on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Four key states, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Virginia, and Florida, all use electronic voting systems without paper backups, which our guest says could harm public confidence in the integrity of the presidential race. This week on the campaign trail, we'll discuss the fears many people have about hackers tampering with the results and what states, including Wisconsin, are doing to minimize the threat. So how concerned are you about hackers interfering with the presidential election? Would you like to see Wisconsin adopt paperless election machines, or does the risk of being hacked warrant staying low tech? What questions do you have about the security, not only of electronic voting, but of the voting rolls themselves, as we've seen hackers attack voting rolls in voter information databases in Illinois and Arizona recently? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post to the Joy Cardean Show Facebook page. My guest is Eric Geller, cybersecurity reporter for Politico Pro. His piece that ran yesterday was titled "Paperless Voting Could Fuel Rigged Election Claims." We've linked to that story from the Joy Cardean Show Facebook page. Eric Geller, welcome to the Joy Cardean Show.
Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
Let's make sure we're all on the same page here. Your piece identifies four swing states, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Virginia, and Florida, that have electronic voting systems without a paper backup. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump supporters are concerned that hackers could break into those states' computers and mess with the vote totals. Does that about sum it up?
Yeah, it does. And it's also important to note that there are a lot of states that are not as competitive that have this same problem. We focused on these four because they're going to be the closest, but this is by no means limited to four states.
Well, I mean, there have been, since these electronic voting machines first came out, there have been people who've been worried, for example, that the companies that own these machines might support one candidate or the other and would tamper with the results. There's been a lot of discussion about that. Why are we hearing more about that now?
Well, I think it all connects to a series of cyber attacks that began earlier this summer, or were revealed earlier this summer, starting with the attack on the Democratic National Committee, that really put this issue of hacking and cybersecurity on the front pages, I think, for really the first time in a while, and certainly the first time when it comes to elections. Experts have been warning for years that these machines are not as secure as many officials claim. They have demonstrated several attacks. The officials respond that those attacks only work when you have unlimited physical access to the machine, and so there's sort of a head-to-head there between researchers and officials. But this has been going on for years. The big new thing now is that, you know, U.S. intelligence officials are privately telling the White House that they think the Russian government or Russian intelligence groups were behind these different hacks. And, you know, anytime you have a foreign state potentially involved in essentially tampering with another state's democratic process, that tends to get people's attention.
Well, and you had the FBI issuing an alert to all 50 states, to the people responsible for elections in those states, telling them to be more or less be on the lookout that there was a threat.
Yeah, and then it's important to note that that's the first time, according to many people I spoke to, that the FBI has sent out that kind of alert about state election systems. You're really seeing now a new kind of partnership taking hold between the federal government and the states, and they're not exactly sure what form it's going to take. It's still being worked out, and I think the reason that this is more challenging than, say, protecting your bank information from a hacker is that, you know, this is a very state-based process. This is a state and county-based process. The federal government does not have a big role in elections. Unlike, you know, with the FDIC regulating banks, there is no agency that can tell state governments, county governments, how to set up their elections. So you do have this interesting dynamic here where the federal government is trying to offer what help it can, but it really can't do much other than say, hey, you should use better security.
Donald Trump has repeatedly talked about how the election could be rigged, mainly by Clinton supporters voting multiple times. What has he said about potential hacking or electronic manipulation?
Well, that's another area where this election presents some unique concerns, especially for opponents of Mr. Trump. I mean, I'm sure many people will remember when he was discussing Hillary Clinton's private email server, and he said during a speech, Russia, if you're listening, I think it would be great if you, tried to hack around and find those missing emails. He said, I think our press would reward you for it. I can't speak for the rest of the press, but I found that very interesting. Any candidate had ever invited a foreign government to use the cyber attack in a domestic election. And so you do have some concerns from Clinton supporters because this is an unprecedented comment. It suggests sort of a casualness with which he views cybersecurity. He's also said many positive things about Russia and its president. And so if you do believe, as many officials have said, that this is linked to Russian government activity, that's another reason for you to think, well, maybe there is something for Russia to gain from this. And that's certainly what many experts that I spoke to have pointed out, that there is this nexus here between the attack and the Russian government and Mr. Trump's kind words for Mr. Putin.
So what specifically has the Clinton campaign been saying about possible election hacking?
Well, Tim Kaine in particular, her running mate, has been very clear that he views that comment by Mr. Trump as deeply worrisome. He's mentioned it in many speeches on the campaign trail, saying basically, how can we expect Donald Trump to stand up to Russian aggression in cyberspace against both government networks and businesses if he's not willing to take a stand against these cyber intrusions? So they're really trying to tie it back to what Donald Trump has said about hacking and about this hacking incident. They're also, I think, trying to really manage expectations. They don't want people thinking that they are leaning on this possibility of hacking. They don't want people to look at it as, oh, the Clinton campaign is just trying to get people scared about this so that if they lose, they can blame it on this. They're trying to avoid that. But what you also see is many Democrats across the country in House races and all the way up to Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi saying, don't believe everything you see in hacked, leaked material, because what the Russians do sometimes, if this is indeed Russia, is they plant misinformation. And so what you're seeing from Democrats across the spectrum is, these hacks are worrisome, but they should also not be trusted implicitly, because if a state actor is involved here, they're also going to want to try to use misinformation.
Mm-hmm. We have a comment from Darlene on Facebook who says, paper ballots are a must in each and every election. Paper ballots always stay around for any and all recounts to match electronic counting. You wrote that a lack of paper trail poses two potential risks to public confidence in the U.S. electoral system. What are they?
So one of the risks is that you could have somebody break into a database that manages these vote tallies and is that really it's not possible to detect, especially because, these systems are not monitored. I was talking earlier about banks. If somebody, breaks into a bank and reroutes money, there are a lot of monitoring programs in place to trace that. That's not really the case with all these election systems, and it's certainly not uniformly the case. So you could tamper with the results in a way that is very difficult to detect, and then, without a physical record of every single vote, there's nothing you can go to compare that result. So you sort of just have to accept that result is accurate, or if you think it was tampered with, you can't really do anything about it. So that's the first risk, is that somebody could actually change the results. But the second risk is, I think, even more pernicious, and that is if you are a candidate who lost a race or a supporter of a losing candidate, and you know that, cyber attacks happen and hackers break into systems, you can just claim that the results were tampered with, that someone supporting your opponent or your candidate's opponent changed those results. And then you have people who voted for that losing candidate saying, well, why should I accept this result? Why should I accept that my candidate truly lost? It's easy to change results. I saw that article in Politico that talked about it. So what makes you think that this is a legitimate result? And I think what that gets to is really this potential danger, and I don't want to overstate things, but it does create the possibility of a breakdown in this core democratic process, which is just accepting the results of an election. I've written about this a lot, and one source I talked to a while ago put it to me best when he said, the purpose of an election is not to satisfy the winner, it's to satisfy the loser. And, once you have people saying, this election is not legitimate, I don't accept it, we see that in essentially non-functional countries all over the world, and that's never been something that we were worried about in the United States. But once you have the ability to actually make that change without even, you know, 21st century monitoring, you know, detecting it, I mean, that creates that possibility that you could have someone make that claim.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Eric Geller, Politico Pro's cybersecurity reporter, about the concerns raised by supporters of Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton that electronic voting systems in certain states could be hacked. How concerned are you about hackers costing your candidate a victory this fall? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Talk at WPR.org is the email address. You can also post to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'll be back after this news from NPR and WPR. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of WPR. This week's On the Campaign Trail, well, we're looking at the threats posed to our presidential election by hackers, something the supporters of both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are quite concerned about. We're talking with Eric Geller, cybersecurity reporter for Politico Pro, about his piece that ran yesterday titled Paperless Voting Could Fuel Rigged Election Claims. It details how electronic voting systems in four states, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Virginia, and Florida, lack paper backups, and whether online troublemakers might sabotage the results in those places. You can find a link to that story on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So are you concerned about hackers, perhaps with ties to Russia, messing with our election outcome? Or do you think that edginess is overblown? How concerned are you about the fear of hacking causing problems? Would you like to see Wisconsin adopt electronic voting or stick with a more low-tech paper ballot? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. Email address is talk at WPR.org. You can also post to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We have a comment from Jerry on Facebook who says, anyone who blindly believes the assertions of vote rigging without supplying evidence is certainly being led by the nose. Not that we should be complacent, but being concerned about it is different from claiming it has happened. The latter is either fear-mongering or sour grapes. Eric Geller, the fact that we are even having this discussion, does that make us think that, you know, something bad might have already happened when in fact it hasn't?
You claim that something has happened, you want to be able to provide evidence, and I think, you know, one of the tricky things about this is, if this has happened, it's entirely possible, and certainly not guaranteed, but it's entirely possible that there would be no evidence. One of the advantages that paper has in terms of the integrity of the election is you need a lot of people to do a lot of things without being noticed in order to essentially rig that result, right? You need shipments of ballots to be misdirected. A lot of people are involved in that physical handling process, and so it's very unlikely that you could get away with that without somebody confessing or somebody being caught in the process. Electronically, that's really not the case. If you can gain access to a system that is logging the results from these voting machines, and there isn't sophisticated monitoring software installed, you can change those results. And again, if there is no paper backup, there's no way to definitively prove that it happened. So it's tough because one of the things that happens in cyberspace is a lot of activity can take place without really any evidence of it. And so, you know, someone like me, it's very difficult to sort of not over describe the problem. You know, I don't want people to think I'm saying that it has happened, but I do want people to understand the nature of the threat and the uniqueness of that threat, which is things can happen undetectably. So we do want to be cognizant of that.
Is it just the presidential race that people are worried about being hacked, or do these concerns trickle down to congressional or even state legislative contests?
Well, you know, this is one of the things early on after the DNC hack and some others, I tried to figure out what is the threat to congressional races, and pretty much everyone told me, at this point, those races are comparatively, you know, small fry elections. The people who have the resources to do these kinds of attacks and also the motive to engage in these kinds of attacks they are probably not going to be focusing on local races. Local races, you tend to have really no sort of, you know, state interest in devoting resources to swinging that. You know, if you can, if you could swing the presidential race, and I'm certainly not saying that it's happening or that it's easy, but if you could do that as a foreign power, that's one race that you need to swing, and basically the entirety of American foreign policy will change as a result. If you want to swing control of a legislative chamber, and, you know, you're hoping that that chamber will then, you know, not pass bills that hurt you or sanction you or whatever if you're a foreign government, you've got to swing a lot of races. You have to know a lot about the particulars of those areas to swing the right counties. Or if you want to use misinformation, you have to really develop a sophisticated message for each of those areas. So there's it's just a lot more work involved. The people who, you know, would have an interest in district-level results or state results, those tend to be people in those states or districts. And, you know, political consultants, leaders of activist groups, they're not going to be, you know, engaging in this kind of behavior because they're not as good as state, you know, as foreign states, and they're going to get caught, and it's going to ruin their reputation. So, you know, they live in those places. They can't really afford to take these actions. So I don't think you're going to see this kind of thing happening below the presidential level.
We have another question from a listener on Facebook about paperless voting machines. How are the votes totaled? Is there a meter on the machine? Does the computer basically report totals, or are they linked electronically to report one total?
So every system varies, and it's hard to sort of get a sense of what's the predominant approach here. But basically the way it tends to work is the machines will have records of how many votes they have tallied built into the machines. And after the polling has concluded, poll workers will go around, and there's essentially a memory bank in each voting machine, and they will take those tallies and they will put them into it's typically a county database, and then those results will get sent to the state level, which will check them. And so it's there's basically sort of at least three steps there. You get the result from the individual machine. You combine it at the county level, and then you send it off to the state.
But I don't want to get too far into the technical weeds here, but the original data in those machines, does that stay in the machine?
It does for the duration of the election. Afterwards, you know, once they've done, if there is an audit requirement, you know, after they've done the audit, really after they have essentially decided what their result is and verified it, then they reprogram those machines the next time they need them. But for the duration of the election, yes, on that day, those results will stay in that machine because they need to know everything that went into the machine at the end of that process.
Okay. Why don't the four states we're focusing on and that you focused on in your article, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Virginia, and Florida, have a paper trail anymore?
Well, some of these states, you know, it really does vary. In Florida, for example, they overwhelmingly do use paper, but they still have electronic machines without paper trails. Those machines are in polling places for people with disabilities, people who can't use a paper ballot system. So they are, I want to be clear, they're not widely used, but they are certainly available. You can certainly request to use one if you want. And when I talked to an official in Florida, he basically said he doesn't know of any verification process to determine that someone is, in fact, disabled. So, again, it does fit in the category of a state that isn't wholly paper-based, but there are variations. There are levels of reliance on paperless voting systems. Pennsylvania is one of the most reliant on electronic voting machines without paper trails. And you know, these states will give different reasons. So in Florida, as I said, it's very rare. They have them for accessibility purposes. I spoke to someone in Georgia who said that they tested electronic voting machines that have a paper trail. You know, there's an add-on that you can install onto these machines. And he basically said, look, it made counting harder. The paper ballots that were generated by these add-on machines, you know, they didn't do so well in the Georgia heat. And the printers that print out these little slips that determine how somebody voted, they malfunctioned all the time. So this is what I'm hearing from Georgia, some technical issues there. But I think it is worth noting that many states are, you know, have no problem using these add-on machines for their electronic voting technology. So Georgia is certainly an outlier. But these states will give different reasons. As I said, in Georgia, they just tested it and they didn't like the results. In Florida, they have old machines that they haven't upgraded with those sort of receipt tallies because they are used so infrequently. So I will say one of the most common reasons is that it costs money to get these add on elements for the machines, or to replace the machines entirely. Either one of those approaches takes a lot of money, and states are not exactly flush with cash, and their election departments certainly don't have a lot of money.
Let's take a phone call. Mike is with us in West Allis this morning. Mike, good morning. Thanks for joining us on the Joy Cardine Show.
Thanks. I just wanted to say that I think that paperless voting is probably a mistake. And the reason is that for the same sort of reason that the people attacked Barack Obama when it came to his birth certificate. If you have a paper trail of something, people who don't believe in the process at least have a way of going back and checking. So if people come to believe that an electronic election was manipulated electronically, there's no way for anyone to confirm that it wasn't. I mean, there is, but there isn't in the perception of the people who believe it. The perception of the people who believe it is that, of course, I don't understand the process that this thing even occurred under. And because there's no process that exists that I do understand, because I've come to believe that it was manipulated, there's no way for you to prove to me that it wasn't. Whereas if you had a paper trail that then is recorded some way electronically, then there is this process which pretty much anyone, I mean, it's a second or third grader can understand voting, and that's pretty much when we all start voting. They can understand that the votes got tallied by some paper, and then it was an electronic report created. So that's, to me at least, that perception is important, even more than the actual vote count. The perception that the votes are fair and that this whole thing isn't manipulatable is more important than whether it actually is manipulatable.
Eric Keller, is perception reality in this case, and is that maybe even the real threat here?
Well, it's incredibly important, and that's where I was talking earlier about how there are two threats, and one of them is actual hacking and the other is perception. I mean, elections, more so than almost anything else that we do, are based on accepting the results and trusting the process. If you don't believe that the leader of your country was picked legitimately or is legitimate in a real sense, where does that lead? I mean, again, I don't want to sound alarmist here, but if you did have a large number of people believing that an election was illegitimate, would they, follow, laws, bills signed into law by that person? I mean, you really have to think about the psychology of that trust breakdown. Trust is the most important thing you can have in an election. Again, it's not about making the winners happy. It's about proving to the losers that they weren't cheated.
Let's take another call. This time we'll go to Karen, who's joining us from Wanakee. Karen, good morning. Thanks for being with us on the Joy Cardine Show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, and thank you so much for this timely, important topic. I've been chairperson of a citizens' election integrity group for the past 4 years, and Eric Geller's article was one of the best I've read. It's an excellent overview, and I really recommend everyone read it. The main point I'm calling in about is the way we talk about that paper backup trail. Oh, by the way, in Wisconsin, paperless systems are not legal. Municipalities are not allowed to use paperless systems. And the vast majority of our big counties actually use voter marked paper ballots. They're counted by computer, but we have the paper ballots. Wisconsin is in pretty good shape when it comes to having that paper trail. What Wisconsin is not in good shape about is actually using that paper trail to audit the results. If you don't, how does it go? I tell people, back when my son was a teenager, and he said there weren't any dirty socks or pizza boxes under his bed, he said he never saw any. Well, of course he never saw any. He never looked. And that's a lot of the reason, when people say, where's the proof of hacking? You just have to ask, well, where's the proof of not hacking? If we don't look at that paper trail to routinely audit it after every election, we don't know what the machines are doing or what has been done to the machines.
Karen, thanks for the question. Eric Keller?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, if you have a system set up to be able to provide that verified result, but you don't use it, And then people start to say, well, I suspect that my opponent stole this election, or people say, oh, that crooked candidate, they stole the election. And you don't actually provide that follow through. You're letting those thoughts and those doubts fester. So it is important, I think, for states to have that audit process. Again, I mean, you know, we live in a country that is basically, you know, the future of it is decided by what people in certain key states, you know, think is right. And if that process isn't verified, if we don't actually know that those people are really making that decision, if we don't check that, then, you know, we're introducing all kinds of doubts. People start to say, I'm not going to go vote, because how will I actually know if my vote was counted right? And that's, you know, that could be, you know, a death spiral for voting in a county or a state.
You, Karen, thanks so much for that call. 800-642-1234 is the number to call to join our program. We're talking about the integrity of our elections in terms of electronic voting and vulnerabilities and record keeping and all of that stuff. 800-642-1234. Eric Geller, you told producer Bill Martins that you had spoken with someone in Wisconsin's elections office about our state's use of paper trails for voting machines. What did you find out, and does that match what Karen just told us?
Yeah, so one of the things I was trying to do for this story is talk to states that do use a paper trail to get them to sort of open up about why it's important. And I talked to a guy named Reed Magny from the Wisconsin Elections Commission, and what he told me is 90% of the ballots in the state are what's called optical scan paper ballots, which is a form of paper ballot. And 5% are hand-counted paper ballots. So optical scan is a machine is reading the paper ballot, which is what Karen was saying. 5% are just straight-up paper ballots that human beings count by hand. And then 5% are cast on voting machines, but voting machines that have what's called a voter-verified paper audit trail, which is if you're going to use an electronic machine, this is the add-on feature that experts say you should use. So 100% of those votes have an element of paper involved, and basically what Reed from the Elections Commission was saying is, you know, they've never had any evidence of somebody hacking into their machines, but you always want to have a paper backup, just so that if you get a tip, if somebody starts a rumor, you want to be able to falsify that. Falsification is the most important thing you can do to tamp down on a claim like that. And actually, he mentioned that you know, there was this HBO documentary a few years ago about voter manipulation, or I should say election manipulation. And what he was saying is, you know, this voter verified paper trail that they have, it's a way for them to tell people who call into them and are concerned about this HBO documentary, you know, hey, look, you know, don't worry, we've got a paper trail. The things that you're seeing in that documentary don't apply to Wisconsin. Wisconsin does have a paper receipt or a paper record for every single ballot that's cast. So it was really important, the way he explained it to me, it's important for them to be able to reassure people in Wisconsin who call in with that concern that it is really not applicable to Wisconsin.
Let's take a quick call before our news break. And Eric, I might have you respond after the news. Kathy is in Washington County. We've got about a minute left, so let's try and be concise. Thank you. Kathy, are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I want to state that I've been a clerk in two different municipalities, and at election time, we did lock our ballots in the vault, or we took them directly up to Washington County, and then they audited it. So everything was audited in our state. That was what we learned through the state. When Kennedy was in there, we were definitely audited, and we definitely followed procedures. So.
Okay. All right, Kathy, thanks for sharing that. Wisconsin doing a good job of ensuring election integrity, and of course, I'm proud to be a citizen of this state. So that's great news. Kathy, thanks for sharing that with us. This is our weekly On the Campaign Trail segment. We're talking with Eric Geller, cybersecurity reporter for Politico Pro, about the concerns raised about hackers possibly working in four swing states and sabotaging the presidential election. How do you feel about that? 800-642-1234. Talk at WPR.org. You can also post your comments or questions on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The news is next. John Munson in for Joy Cardine with you here on the Ideas Network of WPR. This week on the campaign trail, we're looking at concerns raised by supporters of both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump that hackers could interfere with the presidential election. There are four swing states that have electronic voting systems in place without a paper backup. That's where some people are saying the election could be unfairly won or lost. Our guest wrote a piece about this concern titled, Paperless Voting Could Fuel Rigged Election Claims. His name is Eric Geller. He's Politico Pro's cybersecurity reporter, and he's with me this hour. We've linked to his story from the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So how concerned are you about hackers possibly sabotaging the results of the presidential election this fall? Are you confident that America and the states we mentioned in particular will be able to protect the integrity of the vote? And what questions do you have about electronic voting and paperless security? 800-642-1234, talk at WPR.org, or you can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So we had a caller just before the news break, Kathy, or excuse me, was it Karen? I think that was it. She was an actual election official and talked about how careful they are with the paper ballots and how accessible those are to being audited. That seems like it's a pretty secure system.
It does, and I think it points to the fact that, you know, elections, like other processes, but few other processes that are this important, they really depend on human beings following the right procedures, doing what they're expected to do, and doing it competently. And that kind of gets to why, you know, cybersecurity is now entering this discussion, because there are elements that are being taken away from humans that humans aren't involved in. And so county clerks, you know, taking the results, you know, by hand, that paper count to an office to be verified, it may seem, you know, old-fashioned in an age of, you know, iPhones and Twitter, but it's very much about security and integrity, and the more humans you can have in that process, at least according to security researchers, the less likely you are to really have somebody try to intercept that process, because there's no way to hack a paper ballot that somebody is holding in their hand. You know, they're going to know if you mark that ballot down after it's been marked. They're going to see that.
Well, one other aspect of election security is the security of the voter database. We've seen two recent hacks and attempts, or some one of which was successful, to actually steal voter IDs from state systems in Illinois, and an unsuccessful attack in Arizona. Those databases were hacked. That you spoke with Wisconsin Election Commission spokesperson Reed Magny, and who said he's concerned about reports of hackers breaking into voter databases, but that Wisconsin in 2006 rolled out a statewide voter database as part of the Help America Vote Act. And he said the new consolidated system is much more secure than what we used to have, and is confident that our system will hold up. What do you know about how that law has helped protect states' voting integrity?
Well, it's really not clear because it's so dispersed. So every state can implement that law however they want when it comes to the voter databases. They also do not share all the technical details about the security features. You know, there's good reason to not say exactly what you do. But, you know, there are people who would definitely request that states be more clear about the kinds of protections they have in place to whatever degree that they are. That they are able. I can't speak directly to Wisconsin, but I can say that when you look at, you know, we're moving away from voting machines and we're looking at databases, you have new opportunities to intrude because these systems are connected to some degree to the internet, right? You have to allow people to register that way. They are not, you know, voting machines are physical objects that are not on the internet that you have to program with a card that you insert into the machine. And the results are stored there. But voter databases, you know, you can, you know, there is commercial software that manages these databases. You know, they manage other kinds of websites too. But if you can find a vulnerability or a flaw in that, you know, software that's running the database, you can gain access to it, you know, beyond the level of a normal person. You know, you can gain what's called administrator access if you exploit the right flaw. And again, you know, there are ways to detect that, right? So Illinois and Arizona, the two states that were the subject of that FBI alert, they had software that was looking at access to their system, and they were able to detect okay, this person used a flaw to get into this part of the system. And so that's good. Of course, if they don't notice it, you know, what you could have is somebody tampering with the registration results, not just stealing them for identity theft purposes, but, you know, making it so that, you know, I don't know, every Democrat in a crucial swing county, you know, can't vote when they turn up to the polls. Now, there are backup ways. You know, you can cast a provisional ballot. But if we think about the fact that this is all about trust and confidence in the process, even, you know, forcing someone to go to a provisional ballot, you know, that can stir up concerns about, well, hey, why did every Republican in this county get forced to use a provisional ballot? What happened to their registration records? And so, you know, we don't know the exact security measures on these databases, but they are crucially important as that first step in, you know, participating in an election.
We had a comment from Priscilla on Facebook who asks, my question is, how are write-in votes counted, presumably with paperless voting? With the voter dissatisfaction for both presidential candidates, there may be so many write-ins that we will still be counting them by the January 2017 inauguration date. How are write-ins handled in a paperless environment?
Well, there is a spot for you know, putting in your own candidate on these electronic machines, and so I don't actually know exactly how, you know, whether that has to produce a special paper record or whether the words that you write in are electronically captured. I would imagine that, you know, you type it in. You don't, you know, use your finger to trace a shape or anything like that. So, you know, that would get processed the same way that a tally for Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump would get processed. It's a typed in word. I don't think it's handled any differently, but certainly if you have an audit process, collecting all the different votes for candidates that are not the top two candidates, you know, that could take extra time.
So what's being done between now and Election Day to beef up online security and protect our votes? Or is there not enough time to do much of anything?
Well, it's tricky. So earlier we discussed the federal role here. The Department of Homeland Security, headed by Secretary Jay Johnson, is looking into whether to begin treating elections the way that we treat power plants and the way that we treat banks, something known as critical infrastructure. So the Department of Homeland Security has, I think, 16 different sectors of American society, basically, that are considered critical infrastructure. There's a discussion about whether they want to add elections. But even just doing that, which allows election offices to request special software, special training, extra money, even just doing that, you know, when you're this close to an election, even if experts were saying this is the best thing to do, we should do it right now, anything you do with an election is very sensitive, and especially when you have federalism concerns, because this is traditionally a state activity, you don't want the federal government to do more than the states want it to do. And so you can't really do anything. The consensus I'm hearing anyway is that you can't do anything this close to the election. But I think what you're going to see after the election, and I would imagine especially if something goes wrong, is the Department of Homeland Security really talking more earnestly to the states, to the National Association of Secretaries of State, and saying, we really need to sort of step in more and offer you more guidance. We're not going to run these elections for you, because that's your role. But we really think you need to be taking security more seriously. So I would imagine we would see that after the election. But certainly, with less than 3 months to go, just about 2 months actually today, I really don't see any steps being taken at the federal level. Now, at the state level, you could imagine states rushing to install new security features on databases. But we're getting to the point where voting is going to start, so I don't know how much good that
yeah.
would do. The main point of weakness is the machines, and those
okay.
are just so old.
Yeah, I want to get a real quick call in here because this is a real important point, Libby, that Libby needs to make. Libby is in Madison. Please, we're almost out of time, so be quick.
Well, my point is that paper ballots can be manipulated as well. A couple of years ago in Waukesha County, mysteriously, there was a bag of paper ballots that was found the day after the elections that then needed to be counted. That did sway the outcome of the election, if I recall correctly. So paper ballots are also not foolproof.
Yeah, there is no perfect plan, is there, Eric?
That's right, and certainly you can tamper with paper ballots. There is no panacea, but certainly if you talk to people who audit these machines and these systems, what they will tell you is it's much harder to do that on a large scale with physical records of voting than with digital records.
So is your sense that even if there is no evidence of hacking, we'll probably still be hearing about allegations of hacking on election night as the results come in?
I think we will hear about it, but I don't know at what level. Certainly, you know, in our story here, we tally a lot of comments by Donald Trump and his advisors about the possibility that votes will be rigged. He was in Pennsylvania, and he said that the only way he would lose that state is if people cheat. So, you know, you do have to wonder whether Mr. Trump, if he does lose or the next day, you know, would start to float this concern. Certainly many of his advisors are not, you know, tight-lipped about what they will say and what they will speculate on. So I would imagine, you know, some people connected to that campaign will be talking about that, certainly raising the possibility of it. Hillary Clinton's campaign has been much more circumspect about this. So I would be very surprised if one of her advisors were, you know, on TV saying, you know, it's probably the case that we only lost Ohio because, you know, Donald Trump supporters hacked into the databases. I don't anticipate that just based on what her people have said already. But we could be looking at something like that for Mr. Trump, just, again, looking at what his advisors have said in the past.
And what story are you working on next?
Well, I'm continuing to look at this. Another, you know, a big question here is what is the role of the federal government? We do have an election assistance commission that is in an advisory role. And so what I'll be looking at is how many states are listening to the election assistance commission and what could we do to improve that relationship.
I look forward to reading it. Thank you so much, Eric Geller, for joining me this hour. It's been very informative.
Thank you for having me.
Eric Geller, cybersecurity reporter for Politico Pro. His piece that ran yesterday was titled Paperless Voting Could Fuel Rigged Election Claims. You can find a link to that story on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This hour was produced by Bill Martins, Niaja Ellison, and Brian Chasso. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stick around. We're going to take you where no one's been before after the news.